welcome to episode 56 of the Dad's Army podcast. Great to have you with us once again. Hello, Oliver. How are you?
I'm good. It's the new year, and it's a bit difficult to get back into the swing of work after what felt like a lovely eternity off lots of decadence and lots of lions. And so getting back into work has been quite difficult, but I hope you all had a nice festive period. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did. Quite the opposite, though. It felt like it went past in about 10 minutes, opposed to having a long break. Yeah, but did you get to watch much Dad's Army whilst you were off? It was on telly quite a bit.
It was, and I didn't. My mum and dad are really TV fans. They watch a lot of DVDs, but they don't really watch television. But I did remember looking through the Radio Times on a particular day and saying, I wonder if Dad's Army was on, but it wasn't. But I know it was on three times.
I think it possibly was four, but it was all of the same kind of episodes again. I think it was Turkey Dinner, My Brother and I, The Love of Three Oranges, and Put That Light Out, I think, was on either towards the end of last year or the beginning of this year. So, oh, yeah. Interesting choice for the time of year, perhaps.
Putting the Christmas lights out, taking them off the trees. Maybe that's what the bee were going with.
Do you know what? That works. Let's go with it. It's a very, very clever scheduling there, BBC. Well done.
Well, talking of lights out, this is a very, very awful link, so please forgive me, but you could say it's like putting candles out. Birthday candles, because in fact we've got to wish a belated happy birthday to Mr. Clive Dunn, who recently celebrated his 91st birthday, which is absolutely fantastic. So if anyone in Portugal happens to be tuning into the Dad's Army podcast and you happen to see Clive enjoying a nice meal in a restaurant, please do send him our warmest regards and best wishes on his birthday. 91, that's fantastic.
No, it's a major achievement, and it's good to know that he's still going strong. Yeah. But certainly 91 is the eldest of any of the surviving cast or crew that I'm aware of.
He's probably older than Jones's dad was in the second episode.
He was 88.
Oh, wow, so there we go.
He's 88, so yeah, he's surpassed his character's father.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Talking of Christmas, one of the Christmas presents that I got was Dad's Army related.
Really?
It was. And there is a reason why I'm telling you and our listeners this. My wife very kindly bought me the box sets of Dad's Army. Now, it's not because I'm short of an episode or short of the series. I've bought the whole lot as and when they've come out on DVD. I bought them when they were on VHS and recorded them off the telly before that. So I've got several versions of them, but I've never had them in such a space-saving package before.
Wanted room on the shelf.
Well, I'm beginning to figure out what my wife's motivations were. So that means, listeners, that I have, once again, a spare set of Dad's Army DVDs. So what we decided to do, given our competition was so successful last year and so many of you entered, we thought we'd actually divide it up and have a set of mini competitions. So this particular podcast, you have the opportunity to win series 1 and 2 on DVD because they come together, and that's because there are three episodes of series 2 that are lost. So what you'll need to do on this occasion is identify just two episodes. You're going to hear a piece of music, and mounted within that piece of music you've got two clips from two episodes. One of them is from series 1, the other is from series 2, and it's, I'll give you a clue, it's from one of the surviving episodes of series 2. We're not using any radio clips here at all. So all you need to do is identify both episodes. Send in your competition to james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Put January competition in your subject header, and you stand the chance of winning that DVD. And, well, it couldn't really be simpler, could it?
No, this is exciting. Oh, what a great start to the year. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's only one thing left to do. That's to hear the clips and see how you get on.
Nice. Gosh. Knuckle duster, bicycle chain, sandwiches. Do you think you are
kidding, Mr. Hitler? A touch of indigestion, sir.
Yes, just a touch of veterans.
Yes, well, perhaps you'd care to have one of these, sir. Sometimes they're quite helpful, you never know.
Thank you.
Yes.
Calm Tom. So, for all tummy disorders, also combats air raid strain. What's air raid strain got to do with tummy?
So, how fiendish would you say those two clips are, Oliver?
Personally, I'm stumped. As you know, I'm not the best at knowing the titles of the episode. But I actually don't have a clue. I mean, if you were to tell me, if you were to play those clips at random, I'd probably know that they were from the early black and white episodes. But in terms of what episode, I mean, you, Dad's Army podcast listeners, must be going absolutely wild at the minute trying to work this out, because I, for one, don't have a clue. So,
well, they're fairly obscure pieces of dialogue, quite deliberately, from those episodes. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I think it's probably true to say that most Dad's Army fans watch Series 1 and 2 the least.
Mm.
When I first got into them, or when I got the black and white episodes on VHS, I watched them a lot, because they were new to me. But now, I tend to stay in the kind of safe episodes,
yes,
where the characters are established and it's all in colour. But yes, by all means, have a punt. If you don't know, then feel free to have a stab in the dark. All you've got to do is name 2 episodes out of 9. You know, it's a lot easier than the last competition. So we'll draw the winner for this competition in one of the podcasts that we record in the latter half of February. So the deadline for entries is going to be the 15th of February, so the day after Valentine's Day. If you're not listening to this the first couple of days it's released and you think you know the answers, don't bother sending them in if it's after the 15th of February.
And if you're having a wonderful Valentine's Day, just a piece of advice, don't suddenly scream out Battle School when you're having a lovely meal.
That's not in Series 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Anyway, good luck with the competition.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
Well, now it's that time where we go through all your wonderful feedback, and you've been sending this feedback in actually since the summer. This is how long it's been since we've had the pleasure of going through these emails, and apologies if we've had to edit some of them slightly, but some of them are podcasts in their own right, some of these emails. But we're going to be going through the highlights of your feedback over the last few months, and it's quite timely that the first piece of feedback I'm going through mentions our previous competition, since we've just announced the latest one. And it's from our regular listener, Richard Goldstone in New Zealand. Hello, Richard. Happy New Year to you. Richard writes, Hi, James. Great podcast again. But I didn't win the DVDs, never mind. That honour went to Mitch. Hello, Mitch, if you're listening to this podcast as well. At least I got all the answers right in the end, Richard continues. I am very excited about the Jack Jones special, and I'm composing an email to Oliver, probably over the next few days. I'll try not to make it too long, but when you were talking about the best character in a great show, well, you can't be too short either. Now, I'm not sure I can go as far as to say that Jonesy is the best character in Dad's Army. I don't know whether I'd agree with you that much, Richard. I get entirely what you're saying. You can't be too short with talking about such a phenomenal discussion here. And hopefully more people will continue to write in about this Jack Jones special, which is coming up very, very soon. It's in a couple of podcast time where we're going to be going all out discussing Corporal Jack Jones. So please continue to send your feedback in. And I'm looking forward to having Richard on my side against Mr. Rockliffe here as he decimates Jonesy.
Well, I doubt whether I'll decimate him. I think what we're going to do is have a critical look at Jones. That's quite diplomatic, isn't it? Probably quite critical from my point of view, certainly. We've received that email that Richard refers to, and I don't know how much effort you were putting in, Richard, to trying to keep it short, but I have to say, I think you failed. It is absolutely enormous, and I'm very glad that you're on Oliver's side on this particular occasion rather than mine. But yeah, we are going to be looking at Jones. It will be out in February. Both Oliver and I have begun to plan this particular episode, so it is a good time to send in your feedback if you want to get involved in our Corporal Jones episode. And that's purely just to let us know what you think of the character. Is he a good character, or is he, you know, a caricature too far? Anyway, thanks, Richard, for your message. Let's move on to our next piece of feedback. This is from Daniel Stevens from Swindon. Thank you, Daniel, for your email. And he says, I'd like to say thank you for such a great podcast. In episode 49, you and Oliver were talking about Jones's father, and after the second episode, he was never mentioned again after that. In actual fact, the radio version of the episode The Honourable Man, when a platoon was on parade for the Russian visitor, Jones start waving to his dad. After which, Jones quotes to Captain Mannerin, he is not as young as he was. this must mean he is still alive, but just never mentioned. Yeah, thank you, Daniel. I do remember that particular line in the radio version of The Honourable Man. And I think you probably open a slightly larger can of worms here as to whether or not the radio version can be seen as canon.
Yes.
Because it's not really, is it?
Yeah, when you've got the same episodes twice, essentially. It is a very interesting point, though. And it would have been nice to have seen in the TV version Jones's dad there. But it's a nice little aside. And I mean, it must have been a good few years in between the TV and the radio.
I can't remember what radio series The Honourable Man is in, but there are only three series for the radio versions. But I agree. I'm afraid that because they're reinterpretations or retellings of the same story, I don't think you could take them as definitively as fact as you do the TV episodes. However, I think the good thing about it is that you can take out of it whatever you like as
Absolutely.
Well, which is a much more sensible way of looking at these things, probably. But, yeah, good point. Thanks very much, Daniel, for your message.
This is Frank Williams, and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.
Well, I've got one now from Noel Bell in Caroline Springs in Victoria, Australia.
Wow.
Thank you so much for writing in, Noel. Hi, James and Oliver. I have just listened to several podcast episodes, including 49, where you asked about an unusual listening location. Well, I am 39,000 feet above Afghanistan, en route from London to Kuala Lumpur, and listening. I love the podcast. Many thanks indeed. Wow, this is fantastic.
Well, I have to ask, before you continue, are you allowed to send emails on planes? I'm assuming that he typed it on his iPhone, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was sent when you landed safe and securely, and therefore it didn't interfere with any of the plane's systems whatsoever. I'm speaking as a nervous flyer here, Noel. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah. I called into the location for the filming of the Dad's Army movie at the small village next to the M25. It's Chalford St. Giles?
Peter or Giles, I can never remember.
Chalford St. Giles, I think. Near Heathrow before boarding the flight. As I film all over the world, I get to the UK every so often and try to visit Thetford plus location sites. That's very interesting. As a fellow budding filmmaker, would love to hear more now. You were discussing Mrs. Pike, and yes, it was terrible that they did not include her in the movie. I think she did not appear in the radio episode as well. Is that true of Janet? Did she?
I can't remember. I know there are several other actresses who played Mrs. Pike, but I don't know whether they were instead of or in addition to Janet Davis.
Right.
But without being able to look it up right now, then I'll defer to what Noel says.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Can you please cover some detail of the extras behind the actors? In the series, you mentioned in 49 their professionalism. I know Colin Bean has been spoken about before, but I love studying their expressions and would like to know more about them. I've read some details in one of the Dad's Army books. That, in fairness, is a discussion for an entire podcast, really.
It's been waiting to happen, quite honestly, Noel, and we haven't really got round to planning that one. And again, the reason being is because I don't think either Oliver or I have a great in-depth knowledge about the back row. I mean, we know who they are, and we know what they've been in a little, but certainly I would like to prepare for that one a little bit more, and it's something we will get round to, I think.
Yeah, but, interests us both, so let's do it. Let's get it lined up. Noel continues, I am now over the Bay of Bengal. You've travelled some distance writing this email, and we'll have time for at least episode 50, 51, 52 before we land. Your Daily Mail just had Carry On and Darling Buds of May DVDs as giveaways while I was there. I wonder if they will offer Dad's Army in the near future to their UK readers. Regards, many thanks to you all, Noel Bell.
It's already happened.
Yeah.
Not necessarily with the Daily Mail, I don't think, but certainly other British papers. There was a phase a couple of years ago, actually.
But everything came out, didn't it? An episode of everything probably the BBC did a deal, because you could get like episode 2 of Porridge Series 1 or something, and then, you know, go and buy the whole DVD now. So I think, yeah, probably... Yeah, you're absolutely right. Dad's Army probably happened.
It did. Keep Young and Beautiful was released, I think, off the back of Some Mothers Do Have 'Em episodes as well. But yeah, you know, it's good every now and again that Dad's Army gets... it gets made available, if you like, to the public in different means. And I think giving a free DVD away, you know, keeps the interest bubbling away there. So that's really good. Thanks ever so much for your email. And yeah, really good and interesting place. I don't think we've had an email from 39,000 feet up. What's that? 5.5 miles, 6 miles up in the air.
Yeah, it's a long way.
Yes. So, anyway, moving on, but staying with our Australian listener base. This is from Gary in Sydney. Hi, guys. I would just like to add my congratulations on the excellent podcasts. I particularly like the commentaries of the TV shows. I suspect I'm not alone in actually watching the show at the same time, but the chat about the programme in general and other trivia is first rate. It's a bit like listening to test match cricket commentary. Now, you see, as someone who can't stand cricket,
yeah,
I am with it right up until the last sentence, because it makes me feel like we're incredibly boring.
I think we've got a treat for Gary, in which case, because you won't believe it's Gary, but we've actually got lined up for the next podcast an episode on the Dad's Army episode, the test. With a platoon play cricket.
And that is a commentary as well. And I have to hold our hands up and say it wasn't because of your email.
No.
It was because of the, alleged prolific victory we've had over you. I can say you now, Gary.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Ashes series. And we thought, well, it makes a lot of sense to discuss the test at the same about this time. So, I'm glad you're enjoying the commentaries. We do seem to be getting quite a lot of good feedback about the commentary episodes. I have to say, the intention is to watch the episode as we commentate, because there's a lot of stuff that we say, or a lot of stuff that we're supposed to say if we're actually keeping on topic for once, you're only going to appreciate fully if you happen to be watching the episode as well. But hopefully they do work without the pictures as well.
Stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have some even better commentaries coming for you this year. Well, thank you very much for your email, Gary. And I've got one now from Chris Watson. Have you read the scene that was proposed for the first episode? It involved Mrs. Mannering playing soldiers with Mannering and a completely different Mrs. Mannering from the shape in the top bunk. Just wondered what your thoughts are on this. Keep up the good work, Chris Watson. Well, have you heard about this before?
No.
No, I mean, you'll have to let us know, is this in the script book? Chris, I mean,
no, it's not. I've looked as no. well. No. I think, Chris, you're going to need to give us a little bit more information. I'm quite happy to take a look at that, but you know, I'll also mention it to a friend of ours within the Appreciation Society, who I'm certain will know something about it if it's true. But it's the first time I've ever heard it, so yeah. I have to say, Chris, I'm a little bit dubious about it.
I can sort of believe if it was going to happen, it would be the first episode, because, you know, as time went on, we can't introduce her. But if there was an early idea to bring her in, I'm certainly glad that we didn't, if you want my opinion on that. The mystery of Mrs. Mannering is one of the great gags of the show. I'd be quite interested to know how she would be different in shape and how you came across this information, considering we've never, you know, and I know you mean about the bunk. She might have been a very slim Mrs. Mannering. But you'll have to let us know, Chris. Keep us posted on this.
Yes.
Because I'd like to hear more about Mrs. Mannering.
A bit interesting email. Thanks very much, Chris, nonetheless. Our next email is from Jenny, and she says she's from Oz. So another message from an Australian listener. Thanks, Jenny, for your email. Hi, James and Oliver. Just wanted to let you know that I am one of your elusive female Dad's Army fans, and I have been a fan from the beginning when I was a teenager in England. Regarding a perceived lack of female fans, and of course, Oliver, you and I spoke about this a little while ago, about appealing to the male demographic primarily, Jenny says, I think it might be a generation thing, and I would suggest that possibly more ladies of my age might be fans. Having been born only a decade after the end of World War II, I was brought up on all the old stories of that era from one granddad, who was a member of the Home Guard, and the other, who worked in a reserved occupation. I was drawn to watch Dad's Army from the pilot onwards. I think that's interesting because, yeah, I don't think I remember hearing from a fan of Dad's Army who remembers what it was like shortly after World War II had ended. And, of course, you are going to have a slightly different perspective on a programme about the war if you experienced what it was like shortly after, because, of course, rationing didn't finish when the war did. And, you know, times were not easy. But I think you're probably right. There were far more stories around from former Home Guard members. And, of course, you know, when you've got that link to a programme that focuses on that, then, yeah, it is possible that you would have more people rather than just male or females interested in a programme that deals with that period. Anyway, Jenny continues, I now live in Australia, and when my parents visited us, we got out the Dad's Army videos and watched them with my children. These provoked lively family discussions of what it was like for you as children in the war, Nanny and Grandad. Our favourite episode of all time is the one where the German parachute is stuck on a tower, where Corporal Jones says, he's dangling, Mr. Mannerim.
Time on my hands.
Yes.
The very first one I ever saw, Jenny.
Oh, right, yes. Unfortunately, I can't stand that.
I
do like it. I do like it. I like all Dad's Army episodes, but relative to others, I can't stand it. If that makes sense. I think Jones's character is there to appeal to the youngest viewers, as he did to my younger brothers at the time. Yeah, and I think that was a conclusion that we came to. I think I discussed that with Paul Carpenter. Don't think you were there for that one, Oliver. About Time on My Hands. And I have to say, that was one of the hardest recordings that I've ever had to make, because I couldn't think of anything nice really to say about it. But I'm really glad, Jenny, that you've been able to do that in such an eloquent and quite a poignant way. And one of the things that I watched Dad's Army for, and I really appreciate, as any listener to the podcast will know, if they've heard more than one or two episodes, is that I really appreciate the link with the war and how true the programme is to the war, and how it depicts times of extreme hardship in an extremely accurate way, but remains a very unique comedy. And I think what you said here is great, and I like the way that you've been, I like the way your comments echo that, and also tie in, you know, to the silly parts of the episode as well, and the way that they draw children in. And of course, once you've got children's interest, you can teach them and educate them all manner of things that normally and ordinarily they wouldn't be interested in. So yeah, I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. Jenny finishes off, thank you James and Oliver for all the work you put into the podcast. I really enjoy my regular dose of Dad's Army news, stories, insights into the episodes. Kind regards.
It's lovely to hear from you, Jenny. Thank you so much. I love Time on My Hands. I should have been there with Paul and you when you did that one. I probably wasn't on the scene then, but I think it holds a certain place in my heart because it's the first one I saw, I've only been 5 or 6. Because it was in my nana's house in Cornwall, which she only had until I was 6 years old. So that's how young, and it's stuck in my head, that image of Jonesy going around on that crazy merry-go-round contraption around the clock tower. But the scene where they talk about the different ways by dismantling the lighthouse, brick by brick, I think that's a great line. I think it's a... Maybe Jimmy Rockliffe's been a bit hard on Time on My Hands.
Oh, maybe we need to go and revisit it, perhaps. So, I'm not overly keen on it. The biggest memory I have of that episode is seeing the stagehands push that thing that Corporal Jones is sitting on round the top of the clock tower. And once again, Jones just becoming a deranged child suffering from ADHD, I think.
Well, Jenny's point about him being aimed at the younger
character
is a very good point.
No, I think you're right, and I don't think kids are going to appreciate a character who is completely ridiculous. Silly, yes, but not completely ridiculous as Jones was on occasion. But I do think he was certainly aimed towards the children watching the show. And he certainly seems to appeal to a number of children who follow the programme now.
Well, now I've got quite an interesting email here from John Pettifer. Hello, John. John writes, I've just watched the first episode of Dad's Army, The Man of the Hour, and I was upset by the way Mannerim calls Pike a stupid boy. It is my opinion that in this case, Pike is not stupid, but rather it shows he's inactive. Well, I mean, it's one of the most famous gags of a series, but I suppose in the very first episode it could have come over as a bit abrupt. John continues, The broom was a double-edged weapon, knife at one end and bristles at the other. If Mannering failed to see this, then he was a stupid one, not Pike.
That's an interesting take on that particular scene, which I don't agree with, but...
Well, John continues, besides, why destroy a perfectly good broom? When in times of war, supplies are short. This might be just a nitpick. You don't say, John.
I think it might possibly be.
It's good fun. But every time I hear Mannering refer to Pike as the stupid boy, I feel angry. I mean, it's only a TV show, John. And they are only volunteers and don't get paid. I suppose, and you're picking up on Mannering's he is quite harsh on Pike sometimes. I mean, but it's all in good humour. I suppose if you can relate to the position Pike is in as a human being, then it's not particularly nice or pleasant that he should be picked on or ridiculed or whatever. But in terms of a comedy, I see it as a comedy. Just me personally, I can't sort of think, well, I really feel sorry for Frank Pike the boy, because it's a comedy, and I can see it as that. But
I think you're being extremely magnanimous, John, in as much as you think Pike had the foresight to create a double-ended weapon. I think he was intended, certainly in story terms, to be rather dim on that occasion, and he was blindly following Mannering's instructions. Mannering's instructions were, if you can't find anything else, get a carving knife and tie it to a broom handle. And as Pike points out, he didn't say anything about removing the broom from the other end. I don't think it would be a particularly effective weapon anyway, unless he's going to try and either tickle the Germans to death or sweep them away. So I do think on this occasion Mannering was justified. However, just to bring some balance to my comment, I do think there are some examples later on in the run where Mannering is overly hard on Pike, but I don't think this particular occasion is one.
Well, John continues, if he were Pike, he'd have told Mannering to stuff the job or else laid one on him.
I don't think that was in Pike's nature, especially considering he worked for Mannering at the bank.
It could not have possibly been a successful comedy either, John. No. Another point John makes is, why has Godfrey got a rifle? If he is not a conscientious objector, as established in Branded, why has he got a rifle?
Okay. He carries a rifle up until Branded. Branded is in Series 3. The episode you're watching is Series 1. Yes, Godfrey is the only character who holds a rifle. Mm. And he has a rifle, you know, for whatever reasons. I think he is actually referred to later on that he brings it back as a souvenir or something from World War One, where he was a conscientious objector. However, the audience and Godfrey's fellow platoon members only find out that he's a conscientious objector in Branded, which is two series down the line.
Yeah.
And from that point onwards, Mannering gives him the role of a medic.
Mm.
So therefore, I think, you know, it is actually quite straightforward in terms of continuity.
Yeah, and developing the character and developing the, you know, the storylines as the series progressed. So probably at that kind of stage. I mean, we obviously know what they do. They didn't know they were going to get a commission for a second series, let alone a third. Yes. Or, you know, so that obviously came through time. But at least, it's not like Godfrey's walking around vigilante style putting a, you know, putting a rifle in people's faces and thinking, I mean, over your groceries now. Mm. You know, but I take your point, John. A very heartfelt email, and thank you very much for your feedback, sir.
Indeed. And next email is from Rosie. Hello, Rosie. And Rosie sent us a little email a while ago after the Dad's Army weekend in Thetford. And a while ago, she was at the Dad's Army Appreciation Society members' mill, and says, hi, James, not Oliver. Okay, you win. I sent you an email after the Dad's Army weekend saying I had only gone to take my son, but found myself enjoying it. Well, I now find myself downloading a podcast and heard you read my email out. Yes, you were right. I am becoming a convert. I've even started watching the old Dad's Army programmes on Saturday night. Does that blow your theory that it's a man thing? Oh, and I'm sorry, James, but I like Jones. Well, it's good to know that Dad's Army is attracting new fans, even today. And I'm very glad that your son has been able to show you the light in terms of good quality Saturday night programmes.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's great to hear from you, Rosie. Thank you so much for writing in. And it's good to know that there are female Dad's Army listeners of a podcast, let alone fans of the show, who feel strongly enough to let the world know, to cut out the stereotypical vision that it's all us lads liking Dad's Army.
So absolutely.
Any other ladies listening to the show, please do write in. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, I've got an email from Rob Berry. James, just a note to say thanks for the podcast. I ended up in hospital in June and they really cheered me up. Well, we both hope you're feeling better now, Rob. Well, half a year on, I'm sure you're out and about, glad that we cheered you up. A question regarding Arthur Lowe and his singing with the Richmond Orchestra. He sang a variety of songs, including Who Do You Think You Were Kidding, Mr. Hitler, and Lily Marlene as well. Did Arthur record any more albums on his own?
I have absolutely no idea, I'm afraid. I did try to find out, and I couldn't find a definitive answer. I don't believe so. He certainly wasn't adverse to having the odd sing here and there. And there is a sketch, I think it's a Christmas special sketch, Christmas Night with the Stars, where he, John LeMessurier and Clive Dunn sing. I think that's called The Coward Review or something.
Oh, yes.
It's referred to as The Coward Review. And, you know, he's got a fantastic voice there. But in terms of actual albums, if you can't find them on iTunes, or if you can't find them just by sticking Arthur Lowe into Google, then I would have to say I think it's unlikely, but it's not a definitive answer from me there.
For what I've seen of the stage show, what I've heard of the stage show, of course Arthur does a little bit of singing on the album.
Oh, of course. I hadn't thought about that particular album. So it's not an Arthur Lowe album, but certainly the soundtrack. It's not the soundtrack, is it?
It's a cast recording of one of the productions of the stage show in 1975. There is a cast recording on CD now, of which Arthur does a bit of singing. Nothing as prolific as John LeMessurier's Night in Berkeley Square. But I don't know about any solo Arthur albums, but we'll have a look. We'll see what we can find. Rob finishes off, says, once again, congrats on the podcast. They certainly kept me cheerful when I was feeling poorly. Best regards, Rob.
Oh, that's good. It's good to get messages from people who have listened to us again, probably whilst under quite debilitating circumstances, and still managed to take some enjoyment out of us waffling on about nothing in particular. So that's really good. Thanks for your note. Our next message is from Michael. Hello, Michael. Hi, James and Oliver. I've just been watching The Two and a Half Feathers and have had a couple of thoughts and a question. Wasn't it lucky how Jones opened those letters in the correct order? If he hadn't, it would have made very little sense. Because, of course, he gets three letters. Inside the first two, there is a full feather. And inside the third, there is half a feather. So I suppose, yes, the episodes might have ended up being called One Half and Two Feathers, had he opened them in a different order. Yes, oh well. Secondly, when Jones was in the desert, it was nice to be reminded how young Clive Dunn actually was at the time of recording. They really did a good job in making him look old, almost the oldest in the cast, when actually he was a lot younger than the other members, excluding Pike, of course. And I think you're completely right. So it was brilliant makeup at the time. It took me many, many years after I started following Dad's Army and really started getting into the actors' careers and so on to realise that Clive Dunn was actually only 40-something when he recorded his first episode of Dad's Army.
Yeah, people still are surprised now if I talk, because people always ask, well, how many are still alive? And you said Jonesy, you're like, what? I can't believe it,
It's a bit of a shame, really, because the reason people seem to think that is because that's really the only thing that Clive Dunn achieved real fame with. Which is a bit of a shame, I think. You know, he had minor success with things like Granddad, but that's almost on a level with cult fandom. You know, people won't necessarily know that unless they know about Clive Dunn and are interested in him. The question Michael mentions was, where was the desert scene filmed? And fortunately, I actually know the answer to this one, and this was Les Ienties Sands.
Wow.
Which is in King's Lynn. Now, to me, that sounds, I mean, I could be saying it wrong. Les Ienties? How would you say it? I've written this down. So, Oliver, how would you pronounce that?
Lezzie Sand? I don't know, to be honest. The King's Lynn.
Like, it's a beach in King's Lynn.
Yeah.
It's Lezziate. So if you want to stick that in Google somewhere, then you may be able to find it unless they've renamed it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think the beach is still there. You know, well, it's a surviving location.
Who knows? I mean, coastal erosion happens all the time now, yeah. So you know, you may not necessarily be there, but it is possible. One thing I do remember about that particular episode was that location sequence was incredibly convincing, and it didn't look like a beach in Norfolk, quite frankly.
No.
It really didn't. And they managed to achieve it looking hot, and particularly the battle sequences in there. I just thought it was quite a convincing and particularly well done sequence or episode there. Yeah, thank you very much indeed, Michael, for your message.
I've got an email now from John Barnard. James, just a quick one to say, me and my son, Sam, visited the War and Peace show in Kent on Saturday, 24th of July. This is how long ago John wrote this email. Sorry for the delay. We were surprised to bump into, wait for it, everyone, Philip Maddock and the Dad's Army team of Mannering, Wilson, Jones, Pike, Fraser and Godfrey. Was this a mirage? Was this an illusion? They had a good crowd around them and they were playing their parts very well. Ah, so this is...
it's probably a reenactment.
Probably a reenactment. Although Philip was there at least. Was he there though? Is this the real Philip Maddock or was this someone else playing Philip Maddock?
Ah, who knows?
I think I'm gonna assume it was Philip Maddock in person. They were that good, I presume that they were maybe the cast of the Dad's Army play. I mean, there have been several, so perhaps...
Oh, it's possible. I mean, I think it's unlikely, to be honest. I think July time. I think it was still playing at the time, so they could have been doing some promotion. But to be honest with you, you'd have probably recognised... Mind you, he doesn't mention Walker, does he? Because that would have been Leslie Grantham.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite possible. It was Kent. So, yeah, they did play, I think, in Maidstone. But... yeah, who knows? Not sure.
With regards to listening to the podcast in unusual places, as mentioned in the past, but I listened to the first 46 podcasts on the M25.
That must have been one hell of a traffic jam.
Well, John then says he listened to number 50 in the queue to get into the Vatican in Rome.
Oh, brilliant.
That's fantastic.
Well, that is superb. In fact, I think that one probably wins so far, I think.
That's a pretty good go.
Yeah, and this is not really an ongoing competition or anything, but I am particularly interested in where you do listen to the podcast, and where Oliver and I are suitably enough impressed, we'll send you a Dad's Army podcast mug, and I think that one qualifies, don't you?
Absolutely.
The Vatican.
I think John with his Vatican, he's got a mug coming to him.
Okay, John, we shall arrange to send you a mug, and if any other listeners out there have any other interesting places that they've listened to the podcast in, then feel free to drop it into us, james@dadsarmypodcast.com. or oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com. And I think we've reached, at long last, the bottom of our mailbag.
But how did that happen? I mean, it's been so entertaining and engrossing that I can't believe we've got to the end of it already.
We've got through a heck of a lot, so you've been exceptionally busy. There are actually a number of emails that we've received that we haven't gone through, and it's for one of two reasons. Firstly, either it's too incredibly long to go through as part of a feedback episode because it would take up half a podcast. So, Nigel Bromley, I'm talking to you. A brilliant piece of feedback, thank you very much. We will go through it, but it will be on its own as part of another Dad's Army podcast coming up over the next couple of months. Trevor Lynn and Nick Daniels, again, your emails concern the Jones episode, so we will address those during the Corporal Jones episode. But in the meantime, thank you very much to everybody else whose email we have read out. Again, sorry if we've had to edit some of them or not read out all of the emails that we've received. We really do get a lot of emails these days, which is fantastic, but please keep on sending your thoughts in, and we will dedicate a podcast every now and again to just going through your comments and arguing with you, basically.
Yeah, I'm sorry, John Pettifer, if you thought I was a bit harsh on your email. I've never known anyone get quite so emotionally passionate about an episode of Dad's Army. It's quite, you know, please do keep them coming in like that, because they mix it up a bit. That's quite thought-provoking there.
Yeah, it is. I think it makes us I think it makes us look at the events in a slightly different light. Yes, on one hand, clearly, it's a comedy programme not intended to be taken deadly seriously. But on the other side, it is interesting to think, well, how these situations would be in real life.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, would Pike just have continually taken the same level of abuse? It all depends on where the writers are trying to pitch their stories. Is it for comedy or is it for gritty reality? And I think 90% of the time it fits nicely in between the two. It's always interesting to hear from passionate fans.
Well, on that note, well, it's been a fantastic time. It's been a pleasure. And we hope you've enjoyed listening. Please do keep writing into us and following us on Twitter, twitter.com/DadsArmyPodcast or twitter.com/OliverCrocker. Coming up next is the test.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks' time, you'll be able to download a commentary to the test. So hopefully if you're cricket fans as well as Dad's Army fans, that should be a real treat for you. Don't forget the competition. Get your entries to us by the 15th of February and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks' time.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye for now.
If you think we're on the run.
Knife, cosh, knuckle duster, bicycle chain, sandwiches.
Do you think you are giving Mr. Hitler?
A touch of indigestion, sir.
Yes, just a touch of flatulence.
Yes, well, perhaps you would... they're one of these, so they're...
Oh.
Sometimes they're quite helpful, you never know.
Thank you.
Yes.
Calm Tom. So, for all tummy disorders, also combats air raid strain. What's air raid strain got to do with tummy?
This gun, so who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Richard, you're absolutely right. I mean, Jones. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to agree with you that he's the best character in the show. I don't know if I can name the best character in the show. My favourite is Wilson, but it's like naming the best James Bond. People say...
Timothy Dalton.
Dalton is my favourite. James has been sarcastic, but Dalton is my favourite.
He is my favourite.
Is he really?
I'm not being sarcastic.
Oh, you see? Dad's Army, Dalton, we've got everything in common here.